Welcome to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast, your audio source for what's going on in the Chicago theater scene. This is the episode for April 27th, 2009, and on this week's episode, we have an interview with Chris Beyer from Time Out Chicago. Also, we have Chicago's theater news for you, so get ready, and let's talk theater.
This is the Talk Theater in Chicago interview podcast. I'm your host this week, Ann Nicholson Weber, and my guest today is Chris Beyer, who is the one of the theater writers at Time Out Chicago, and just very newly appointed theater editor. He'll be taking over from Christopher Pyatt in about a month. So welcome, Chris.
Thanks, Ann.
I'm interested in talking with you both about Time Out as a specific publication and how you see the role of that magazine in the theater journalism of the Chicago scene, and also more generally how you view the role of the theater critic and arts writer. Mm-hmm. So why don't we start with the more specific and talk a little bit about Time Out Chicago, where you are taking over the reins shortly. And I know that, you know, the publication has been in existence, what is it now, 5 years?
Just over four, actually.
Four. Mm-hmm. And has become, I think, very well-regarded and very powerful in the Chicago theater scene. That's my perception of it, at least. So I'm just interested, you know, what you set out to do and how much of it you've accomplished and kind of what's been the course so far.
Well, I think what we set out to do, and for the first 2.5 years that I wrote for Time Out, I was a freelancer, so I wasn't setting the direction, but I think I have a good idea of what we were trying to do, was to level the playing field a little bit. Mm-hmm. The largest theaters in town, the Goodman's, Steppenwolf's Court, Broadway in Chicago, are always going to get plenty of coverage in the daily newspapers, in Chicago Magazine, mm-hmm. You know, broadcast, where have you. And we were really interested in giving that same kind of coverage to the off-loop scene, the fringe and the storefront theaters. And one way that we tried to do that, in the beginning especially, was to give the same word count, the same, you know, amount of print space to every review, no matter if it were, you know, the latest Broadway tour launching in Chicago, or a world premiere at the Goodman, or a world premiere at say, the side project, mm-hmm. you know, the shoebox mm-hmm. size space in Rogers Park, to really give every artist and every theater company in town equal footing mm-hmm. As much as possible. Obviously, everyone is working with different budget sizes, different lengths of runs, different amounts of resources,
right.
But giving them a sort of base level of attention mm-hmm. Was definitely one of our goals.
And, of course, one of the problems is there is just so much going on.
Absolutely.
I think, you know, over 200 companies active at any one time. And so how do you decide what to cover if you're going to try to cover those who aren't otherwise covered?
Well, it is a difficult decision every week. You know, we're no longer in the glory days when the reader could cover any show that opened, mm-hmm. which was the case, or at least the perceived case, when I first came to Chicago about a decade ago.
Right.
And that's just simply not possible for any publication anymore in the print media environment. So we do have to pick and choose. And the larger productions, we sort of have to cover. You know, people expect to read about what's new at the Goodman or at Northlight or mm-hmm. Companies of that size. So we have to make decisions among the storefront companies. I would say one of our rules of thumb is that world premieres, new works, mm-hmm. are always going to take precedence over a revival of a play that may have been done 2 or 3 times already in this decade.
Mm-hmm.
we're interested in giving attention to new artists, you know, young companies. Generally, just if you can demonstrate as a young company or a small company that you really have an idea of something you're trying to accomplish as artists and not just producing shows to showcase yourself as artists.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Although I will say that my own prejudice is that all that matters is it be really good.
Sure. You know? Yeah, absolutely. I hate to say no to certain shows because I know that there might be, you know, a great production of, you know, Brighton Beach Memoirs coming down the, right. the line or, you know, a really terrific revival of Proof. But if we've already reviewed Proof 3 times in the last 4 years, which I think it's safe to say we probably have,
right.
It's going to be harder to make that case for giving space to, you know, yet another revival of something that's been written about before.
Do you have to get your review in within a certain period of opening? I mean, suppose that there gets to be a lot of buzz about something that you didn't cover. Mm-hmm. Can you go back and do it then, or is it...
Well, most runs in Chicago are so brief that mm-hmm. that becomes difficult for us. You know, every once in a while, just the vagaries of scheduling mean that we can't get to a show that we know we would like to review until, you know, maybe a couple of weeks into its run. Mm-hmm. I know that happened with this current week's issue, a storefront theater musical at Corn Productions, the Conservatory. You know, just because the schedules of our reviewers, all of our freelancers, didn't allow for us to get there until the reviews had already run in mm-hmm. I Know the Reader and some other publications. But we still knew it was something that we wanted to cover. There's only maybe a couple of weeks left in their run now, mm-hmm. so... Mm-hmm.
I'm sure they wouldn't say, oh, don't bother.
No, I'm sure they wouldn't, but it's unfortunate when, you know, if we end up writing a really terrifically positive review,
right.
and it runs in the magazine when they only have 3 performances left, you know, it's... we would rather be able to help them earlier in their run.
Sure.
Rather than sure. at the last minute.
I understand, though, that reviews from respected publications can also be very important for grant funding and so forth. So it's, you know, you have a purpose beyond just the audience for this production.
That's absolutely right. You know, having print reviews does help companies, small companies, who are applying for grants. I don't come from a grant writing perspective and you know, only learned that within the last 6 months or so, which... Mm-hmm. Which makes me feel so much worse so when we can't review.
The burden of responsibility. Yeah.
And I think there's also, you know, there's also the role of reviews in just feedback for the artists mm-hmm. and in archival purposes and, you know, creating a record of the ephemeral art of theater.
Right,
Which is a really valuable tool for audiences and artists both, I think. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. You mentioned that the reader used to be able to cover everything.
Mm-hmm.
How do you distinguish your role and that of the reader? I mean, neither one of you can cover everything now, but at least you were both trying to give play to the companies that would be overlooked by the Sun-Times
sure.
the trip. So is there any other way that you distinguish the voices of those two publications?
I wouldn't say there's... I wouldn't say I explicitly distinguish the voices. In fact, we have one freelancer who writes for both publications, Zach Thompson, who is one of my favorite writers.
Mm-hmm.
The Reader and Time Out, I think, both come from a similar point of view as far as the audiences that we're writing for
mm-hmm.
And what we're trying to accomplish with our reviews. I have a great deal of respect for Tony Adler, who's the Reader's theater editor now. And,
well, you mentioned your readers. Is it the same readership, do you think, for those two?
I think, I'd like to say that Time Out's readership is a little bit younger than the mm-hmm. readers, probably.
Mm-hmm.
I can say that the Time Out's readership tends to be 40 and under. You know, a lot of our readers tend to be single. They tend to be people who ride the CTA and don't necessarily own cars. There are people who live in the city and less so in the suburbs, which is which bears on decisions we make about theater companies in the suburbs and whether or not we can cover their shows. We very rarely go out to Drury Lane Oakbrook, for instance, or the Marriott Theater, you know, theaters that are difficult to impossible to reach by public transit.
Well, besides who you're writing for and what you're covering, what is there any kind of angle or mission that you could articulate either for the magazine now or perhaps for your coming reign?
Well, I don't think I'm going to drastically change the mission of the TSC Theater section going forward. Christopher Pyatt and I have worked together very closely and very well. I won't say we share a hive mind or anything like that, but I think we come from very similar perspectives. And he's really created something special that I hope to maintain in the way that the TOC covers theater. I think as far as a mission statement for the way we cover what we cover, I think we've made it pretty clear over the years that we are very much interested in theater that is made by and for Chicago. In that sense, we've sometimes been maybe more critical of shows that seemed to be created for a post-Chicago audience.
A post-Chicago?
Well, for instance...
Like it's going to go on to Broadway.
Yeah, for instance, like Turn of the Century at the Goodman last fall, which was very clearly, in our eyes, a tryout for a commercial run at a nonprofit theater. And I made a point of calling that out in my review. You know, we're also not always as interested in Broadway and Chicago productions, you know, because we have so many companies of artists who actually live and work here who we want to give that space to.
Can you talk at all about... okay, well, here's a here's a way to get at it. Do you, you know, eventually you're going to be in the position of hiring other reviewers. What do you look for in a reviewer? What attracts you to someone's work? And how important is it to you that if you see the same show, you come to more or less the same conclusion about it?
I think the skills that are important for a reviewer, for Time Out especially, are an ability to synthesize a lot of information in a very small space.
How many words typically are your reviews?
On average, our reviews run about 250 words, which is, you know, 2 to 3 paragraphs. So when you're writing about, say, a new work in 250 words, you have to be able to tell the audience what the work is about, give them an estimation of the production, you know, call out design elements, particular performances, maybe place it in context of previous works by the same playwright or by the same company. There's a lot of information you have to pack into a very small space, and to be able to do that elegantly is
hard.
A very rare skill.
Right.
I think also I'm looking for younger voices, for critics who come with a strong perspective, a strong sense of what they like and what they're interested in. But I'm mostly looking for new perspectives. We made a point, or Christopher made a point, I should say, when Time Out launched 4 years ago, of finding new voices who, you know, weren't already being heard in the Reader or New City or the Tribune. And I think that that really contributed to the way that we were able to gain attention for the section and to gain a reputation for having a unique perspective as a staff, as a team of writers and freelancers. So that's definitely something I'm looking to continue. I'd also very specifically like to find some more female writers, perhaps more writers of color. As it stands right now, we have a fantastic stable of freelance writers in the theater section. I couldn't be more proud of the writing in our section, but It is also very heavily white and very heavily male. Mm-hmm. I don't want to establish quotas or anything like that, but I would like to diversify the points of view that are represented.
Okay, I'm going to go at you here.
Because
I am really uncomfortable with the idea that the only person who can understand, or even that your color or your gender mm-hmm. strongly defines how you react to a piece of theater. I mean, I won't say it doesn't enter in, mm-hmm. but implicit to me in what you just said is that in order for a reviewer to speak to the women in the audience, he needs to be a she, or something like that. And I guess I don't agree with that. Why is that important to you, I guess, having now declared my own opinion? Why is that important?
I don't think that gender or race necessarily informs the opinions that a reviewer will have about a play. Uh-huh. I would be one of the last people to say that, only female reviewers can speak to plays by women or anything of that sort. Uh-huh. But I think just as it's important to have, say, female playwrights or playwrights of color or performers of color and directors represented on our stages, it's equally as important to have a diverse range of backgrounds and points of view in the reviews that are being written about those plays. I would like for female writers, say, or non-white writers to be respected voices in the conversation.
I don't know. I mean, I just have to say one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you is because, mm-hmm. for me, your reviews are the most dependable of all the reviewers in Chicago as an indicator of what I'm going to think of a show. Mm. So,
well, that's a nice compliment, too.
Well, one way or another, I feel like mm-hmm. we're like-minded in what mm-hmm. we respond to in the theater. And, you know, I'm a 50-year-old woman, and you're a younger than that guy. I won't guess, but definitely quite a bit younger than that. And I don't know what it would be in our backgrounds, or I think it's, I mean, what is taste? Of course your taste is informed by mm-hmm. your background to some extent. It feels much more gut than that. You know,
yeah.
There are people, plenty of people I grew up with have exactly the same education I do, have similar backgrounds. They don't like the same theater I do. They don't see the same single actor's performance just sticking out at them as being so lovely, you know? Mm-hmm. And of course, that's what you want from a reviewer. You want to find the person
whose taste you feel you can trust.
Trust. And yeah. It's for two reasons. One is because you want to know what to go do. And the other because it feels really good to be validated in your own perspective. You know, you say,
it does.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. I wasn't crazy. You know, there's that feeling of connection.
You're right. There is, you know, a lot of it is taste. A lot of it is sort of a gut feeling. And that is not, taste doesn't have gender. Taste doesn't have color.
Right. Well
and
said.
In finding new writers, in finding new reviewers, I'm definitely going to be more interested in what they seem to be interested in as writers and what they mm-hmm. respond to in the theater mm-hmm. than, like I said, establishing any kind of quotas.
Right.
But I think it's encouraging to. It strikes me that it should be encouraging to female artists and to non-white artists. And to perhaps the white male artistic directors choosing to do the work of uh-huh. female and non-white artists, if those same voices are represented in the media
uh-huh.
as well.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
But yeah, absolutely. I'm going to be more interested in what they respond to theatrically, and have a couple of sample reviews.
Hopefully, shows you've seen.
yeah, and it's not at all like a deal breaker to me that they like and dislike exactly the same things that I do.
Right.
I disagree with, our freelancers on regular occasion.
Mm-hmm.
Christopher Pyatt and I have disagreed mm-hmm. pretty heavily on shows in the past. But as long as you can articulate why you feel the way you feel about mm-hmm. a particular piece of theater. That's the most important skill for a reviewer to have.
Yeah. Well, let's get beyond reviewing and talk a little bit about, the feature aspect of the magazine, mm-hmm. which also I think is important because there's sort of judging something up and there's letting an audience more into where it came from, mm-hmm. Which is how I would articulate what a feature is for, but I guess I should have asked you first.
That's pretty accurate, I would say. Our features tend to be preview stories. Mm-hmm. We do a lot of profiles of artists, profiles of theater companies, and it's also terrific when we can find ways to write a feature about an upcoming show in a way that might catch the eye of someone who doesn't maybe regularly read the theater section. Mm-hmm. Like one recent example of that is the feature we ran on Dog and Pony's production of God's Ear, which has a score by Abraham Levitan, who's a local musician, records and performs as Baby Teeth. And the company, the theater company, invited him to write a score for the songs that are featured in Joni Schwartz's script. So that's a way for us to write a story that's very specifically about a piece of theater that interests us, but that might also bring in
the music.
Someone who doesn't always go to theater, or
right.
someone who is more interested in this musician that they know something about, and oh, he's doing a play. Like, what's this about?
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. Going back a little bit to your own approach as a critic, I know for myself, if I had to say that one element is the most important in defining my response to a show, it's the writing.
Mm-hmm.
If I go to what I consider to be a dumb play, no matter how beautifully produced, it's going to be really hard for me to care about it, you know? Do you have any kind of similar, any bias that way? Is there some aspect that matters more to you?
I think I would agree with you on the writing.
Of course, we're both writers, so maybe that's not surprising.
Yeah, exactly. Here's our bias.
Uh-huh.
It is hard. It is hard to see a really terrific, well-executed production of a play that you just can't get behind.
Right.
As a script, a piece of written theater.
Right.
And I also tend to pay a lot of attention to acting. You know, I'm mm-hmm. also a former actor myself, and that certainly informs the way that I view theater.
Right.
Although I was really lucky, I consider myself really lucky, that I had a non-conservatory, a BA theater education. So I actually trained in directing and took classes in design and, know how to run a soundboard, and I can work a fly loft,
right.
Which I find really helpful for me viewing a play and finding a way to write about it, to judge it.
Yeah.
And that my experience isn't that limited.
Yeah, I'm sure that's true.
Yeah.
I often go to the theater with my brother, who was a director and an actor, and mm-hmm. if it's well directed, that carries him a huge way, you know,
sure.
even if it's a script that I don't like as much. And I can see a wonderful play, you know, well enough directed and be very happy, and he's going nuts because, you know, how could he have brought him in from the left there, you know, whatever.
Right.
So I guess we all do have, obviously, based on our own, what we understand best, perhaps,
mm-hmm.
and I can imagine well that having an understanding of so many more aspects of it is very useful as a reviewer. Something that interests me about you is that besides writing for your daily bread for a magazine mm-hmm. about the theater, you also find the time to blog about the theater, which seems like an awful lot of the same thing, and I wonder why you do it, and what's the difference between the writing you do for the blog and what you do for the magazine?
Well, you know, when I started the blog, which is called Storefront Rebellion, it's very specifically about theater, I began writing that when I was still freelancing for Time Out, before I was on staff.
Mm-hmm.
And so I looked at it as a way for me to have more space to cover the aspects of shows that I'd seen or thoughts that I had that I didn't have room for in print, or that perhaps I hadn't been assigned to for the magazine. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because I got hired on staff at Time Out only a few months into Storefront Rebellion's existence. And already by that point, the blog had become something that I hadn't quite expected, in that it became sort of a direct conduit between me and the people I was writing about. The readership started to lean very heavily towards the theater community itself, mm-hmm. as opposed to a general readership, which wasn't something I'd explicitly intended and hadn't quite expected. And having sort of a direct line between my work as a reviewer and a feature writer about theater and about the community about which I was writing and their ability to leave comments and have a conversation back and forth has become really valuable, I think, to me as a writer, and I hope moving forward as editor of the section, and guiding the way I think about theater, the way I come up with story ideas, and having sort of a transparency of relationship between my work as a reviewer and a journalist and the people I cover.
It's a kind of accountability, I think.
It is. And I think it really helps the relationship between us as writers and the people we cover, if they have that sense of, what is our process like? Mm-hmm. What challenges are we dealing with?
Right.
It's been sort of an unexpected bonus of having that other blog on the side.
Yeah. Well, that raises just one last question, because I know you've got to get onto a reading at Side Project. But I'm sure you must form relationships with theater artists.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go and see shows that they've done, and sometimes you probably don't like them. Does that create an awkwardness? How do you cope with that?
Well, it's true. Working in a genre where you are covering a hyper-local, art form,
mm-hmm.
Yes, as reviewers, we interact with the people we're covering on a personal basis all the time. And because Christopher and I both sort of came from being theater artists ourselves into writing about theater for TOC, which is true of a lot of the section editors and section writers and Time Out. So we've always had friendships and relationships with people in the community, and it's something that I keep at the back of my mind at all times as far as conflicts of interests,
mm-hmm.
and should I allow myself to write about, to review this play that I may know two of the cast members in,
mm-hmm.
or should I recuse myself and send someone else?
Mm-hmm.
It can't always be avoided, and I have definitely had to write less than enthusiastic reviews about work done by people with whom I have friendly relationships.
Do you ever send an email beforehand and say,
never beforehand,
I wish I didn't have to do this, but what do you say?
Never beforehand, but I think as we were saying with having the blogs and having that accountability and transparency of process, I think for the most part the artists about whom we write understand by now that nothing is ever meant personally.
Right. No, they don't. No artist does. You've put yourself out there to be, that's you up there being rejected. I do think fundamentally that's unavoidable.
No, you're probably right. There was a case a couple of weeks ago where a story that Christopher and I had written was getting some pretty nasty anonymous online comments, mm-hmm. and it was driving me crazy. And my friends pointed out to me, wait, do you see the irony of you getting this upset over what is basically a bad review?
Right. Fair enough.
Yeah, all right.
Good
you got
point.
Me.
Yeah. I mean, it's very hard, I think, for artists that the most concrete, specific response they get is judgment. Do you know what I'm saying? That, you know, of course, when you're in the theater, you get something back from the audience, but it's, you know, it's hard to pin down. And so the relation to the importance of the critic is maybe disproportionate. You're just one member of the audience. And yet you don't get very many other very specific, carefully argued opinions about your work, I don't think. So
it's true. Every critic is just one opinion. And some of us are just lucky enough to have very large audiences interested in those opinions. Mm-hmm. All I can say is that, you know, speaking for myself and the rest of Time House writers, we do the best we can to be fair in our assessments, mm-hmm. While also providing guidance and service for the readership.
Right. Mm-hmm. I guess one of the great things that the internet has done is made accessible kind of all the reviews by all the critics, mm-hmm. In a very easy way, and that maybe dilutes the power of any one critic and kind of emphasizes that people can disagree.
Mm-hmm. Having the ability to see them all one after another in a row on theaterinchicago.com is kind of democratizing us as critics. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's one of the really valuable aspects of the website, which I don't have any interest in. I just write for, so I can say that. Well, thanks, Chris. I know you have to get going, but mm-hmm. I appreciate you taking the time to talk to me.
Thanks so much, Anne. It's a pleasure.
Thanks.
Hello, Chicago, and welcome to the Talk Theater in Chicago News podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Moat, bringing you the theater news for the week of April 27th, 2009. The big fat hit Broadway production, Shrek the Musical, with book and lyrics by David Lindsay Hebert, will launch a national tour here in Chicago. Shrek the Musical will play at the Ford Center for the Performing Arts, aka the Oriental Theater, for a limited engagement beginning in June of next year. The announcement of the national tour follows the news that Shrek the Musical received 10 nominations for Outer Critics Circle Awards, which includes Best Musical. The show also received 3 Drama League Award nominations this week. The entirely new Shrek the Musical is based on the story and characters of Shrek, the first edition of the DreamWorks animation movie series. It tells the story of a swamp-dwelling ogre who goes on a life-changing adventure to reclaim the deed to his land. Joined by a wisecracking donkey, this unlikely hero fights a fearsome dragon, rescues a feisty princess, and learns that real friendship and true love aren't only found in fairy tales. Tickets are now available for groups of 20 or more. Individual tickets will be on sale to the general public at a later date to be announced, so stay tuned right here to Theater in Chicago's news podcast for that date. Court Theater will conclude its 54th season with August Wilson's beloved classic, The Piano Lesson. It'll be directed by resident artist Ron O.J. Parson. It's the 4th play in Wilson's Century Cycle. It will run at the Court Theater from May 5th through June 7th. The Pulitzer Prize-winning play is the 1930s entry to his 20th century play cycle. The Piano Lesson is the story of two siblings' struggle to come to terms with their inheritance and the ghosts of their dead. August Wilson, who passed away back in 2005, explores the heritage and experience of African Americans decade by decade over the course of the 20th century. For tickets and more information on the other 9 plays in the cycle, click on over to Theater in Chicago's Theater News section. Theater critic Christopher Pyatt has announced that he will be leaving his position as lead critic for the theater section of Time Out Chicago. Pyatt has been in charge of Time Out Chicago's theater section for several years and recently come to the decision that it's time to move on. His fellow writer, Chris Vyer, will be stepping in as chief critic in the interim until a replacement is hired. Chris is also our featured interview for this week. Pyatt's last day will be May 22nd. Personally, I followed his blog and enjoyed his quit quite much. hopefully we will still be able to find his writings somewhere online. Northlight Theatre is preparing for the Chicago premiere of The Lieutenant of Inishmore by Martin McDonagh. The production will run at Northlight Theatre from April 29th through June 7th. When an Irish hitman's cat has been killed, the folks back home have to fight over who has to break the bad news to him. The violence soon escalates, several dismemberments, and a smattering of cow mutilations. And later on, all is finally all right with the world again. Or is it? In this wickedly funny black comedy from the author of the recent Oscar-nominated film In Bruges, McDonagh focuses on the implications of outrageous reactions to small misunderstandings. Tickets for The Lieutenant of Inishmore are currently available. For more information on how to get those tickets, click on over to theaterinchicago.com. Thank you for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago News Podcast. Remember, you can find us here every Monday with more news ready for you to enjoy. So, until next Monday, that is the theater news from Talk Theater in Chicago, and I'm your host, Dustin Moat. Thank you for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast. I would like to thank Chris Beyer for giving us the honor of interviewing him this week. I would also like to thank Ann Nicholson Weber and Mark Meyer. Without them, this podcast would not be possible. And I would also like to thank you, our listening audience. Remember, we will be here every Monday with a new episode ready for your listening pleasure. So, until next Monday, I'm your host, Dustin Moat, reminding you, Chicago, to keep talking theater.